Next time on Star Trek The Next Generation, a serious accident releases highly toxic chemicals.
Begin evacuation of secondary hull.
And contamination ignites a chain reaction that's tearing up the Enterprise.
Controls are not responding, sir.
Now the crew faces destruction at breakneck speed.
We can't shut it down, Captain. She's accelerating out of control.
On the next exciting episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Welcome to Strange New Takes. I'm your goddess of empathy, Nach Karnik, and with me in the holodeck are...
Rudy Kuzbaker.
Emily Bowen Marler.
And Adam Bowen. Welcome to Strange New Takes, everybody. We're excited to continue our series on holodeck episodes, and I guess holodeck-adjacent episodes, or episodes that seem to feature lots of hollow things in them. This episode...
Isn't that every episode of Voyager?
Kind of, yeah. We should just watch Voyager instead. Okay, but anyhow, this is the episode Hollow Pursuits from Star Trek The Next Generation.
Before we start, we want to remind you all to follow us on social media at Strange New Takes on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Tell your friends about us. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts.
And as always, we will be spoiling this episode as we talk about it. So if you haven't watched Hollow Pursuits yet, please go ahead and do so. We may also spoil other bits and pieces of Star Trek in general media. And this episode, I would say, is actually important, really important to watch, because personally, I feel it has a nice little, one of the nicer just right at the end twists that Star Trek has. I remembered it when I saw it again. So yeah, watch the episode.
So this is, I was going to say the 21st episode of the third season of TNG, which it is. We're going to talk about that. But this is the 53rd episode of our podcast, which is pretty incredible because it's July, and I remember us starting recording this in August last year. So I don't know what, 52 weeks, technically it's a year later. So I
Well, it's because
what
the
happened.
Last year has been longer than any year of any of our lives,
yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Did we accidentally record twice in one of those weeks?
We have been in a time loop.
Yeah.
You've been on every episode, though. That's pretty amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I apologize to that one listener out there who's probably like, you know, they all keep changing, but this fucker is always on every single episode. And really just go away. It's been lucky, you know. I don't think if I wasn't working from home, I probably wouldn't be here every week. But
yeah, that does help. That does help.
Yeah. But anyway, it's thank you. Thank you, Max and Dinah and Bill as well, who aren't here right now, for all of your work on this podcast. And thank you, listener, for listening to us for an entire year. We've got a great back catalog. If you haven't listened to all the episodes, go back. There's some great Strange New Takes out there. You can follow the journey of Adam's chickens, for example. It's a beautiful thing, you know? So
it really is.
Yeah, there'll be a museum to Adam's strange new chicken takes someday. All right, well, today we are, as Adam was mentioning, talking about Hollow Pursuits, which if I was a writer on TNG the whole time I was filming, I would be like, hollow, get it? And poking all the cast members that I was around. But thankfully, I wasn't there. This episode first aired on 30th April 1990. It was written by Sally Caves. It was directed by Cliff Bowle. And the in-universe date is 2366. So we always start our discussions of these episodes with our strange new take. So, crew, who's got a strange new take for me?
I can get started. A general new take, actually tied to Star Trek a little bit. I don't know where I saw it, but I think there's a commemorative Tom Paris plate out there now, like a cartoon Tom Paris. And I don't usually buy stuff like that, but I don't know. That just looks too good not to buy. So yeah. That's my general new take. And then this episode, we'll get into it in detail, but it's almost like The episodes are focusing on issues of humanity, and at the same time, because we're talking about a holo series or a series, like the podcasts are focusing on holograms, I'm looking at it from their perspective as well, and I've never seen these episodes with that in mind, and so that's really interesting. It's carrying over from the previous one as well with Nog and Vic Fontaine and Vic Fontaine's rights and self-determination and all that. So I see some of that here as well.
Well, have any of you watched the Art of Tidying Up, the Marie Kondo show that's on Netflix?
The life-changing magic of tidying up.
Okay, there you go. Life-changing magic of tidying up. I knew Adam would know. So I'd never seen it before. I've heard people talk about, you know, using her technique, and my house is a disaster. But let me tell you, the best way to feel better about your house is to watch an episode of that show, because I don't have near as much crap as the people in the episode I saw. It made me feel like it was a much more manageable task than I thought, because I got a lot of crap, but yeah, it does not compare. Like, they had to have like a whole moving truck to collect all their crap. Oh my God. I was like, whoa, that is just a little much. But anyway, so that made me feel better about myself. And my strange new take for this episode is that I didn't realize the Enterprise crew was full of so many jerks. But it is. There are a lot of jerks on that ship. And the captain was not one of them, even though the captain was a big jerk early in season one. But that he was not one of the jerks in this episode, I didn't think.
Yeah, just made an unfortunate flub that did not improve things.
So I do, you know, just to respond to that, Emily, I do wonder if this is, and not to jump on her too much, but Shelley Caves has written two episodes of Star Trek, one on Deep Space Nine and one on TNG. So I do wonder if it's just a new writer coming in and not really knowing the character histories as much in writing what is a compelling episode, but maybe not a compelling character piece for some of our characters. But I don't know. Maybe that's giving her too little credit and too much credit to other writers on the show. Anyway, my strange new take is that I am having some trouble understanding if I'm getting too obsessive over Anthony Bourdain. I didn't follow the man until after he died. And I've watched a movie about his life that came out recently. I'm rewatching all of his stuff. And I feel very compelled to like understand him and gobble up any information about him and like, I don't know. I'm getting a little obsessed, and I don't know when too much is like how much is too much in that area, you know? Because he's such a complex guy, and I really am finding myself wanting to learn as much as I can about him. And maybe that's a little excessive at times, but he's a fascinating guy. If you haven't read his books, certainly do that. If you have then the time to watch his shows, do that too. I think it's a beautiful thing, the way he talks about culture and the world. I prescribe a lot. I think just to continue my off topic, I apologize, I'm going a little long here. But the one thing that I've always respected about him is that he always talks about food you don't like and grosses you out, as like, if you're offered something by someone who is like lovingly giving it to you, you just got to treat them like they're your grandma. If grandma gives you something where you're like, this turkey's a little bland, you just eat it. And then you say, can I have seconds? You don't like, say like, actually, I don't do that. And that's what traveling the world is about. You just, you accept what you can if someone's offering it to you. Now, no one's saying that you need to go and seek out weird stuff to eat that you don't want. But if you're in someone's home or their restaurant or whatever, you be open to new experiences. But anyway, I really love that man's approach to culture in that way. I'll keep my episode takes short, which is just that I found this episode to be a little hollow.
Uh-huh. Let's see what you did there.
There you go. Yeah. For my strange new take, I'm going to say give your chickens a good high quality dust bath. I've always understood the importance of having a good dust bath for my chickens. That's how they get rid of parasites and all that stuff. But I kind of let the ladies choose where they wanted to have one, and then would just sort of provide the materials for it. Just recently, though, I just bought them a gigantic tub. That's sort of a galvanized tub thing. Put a bunch of sand and some peat moss and some a little bit of other stuff in there. And they are so delighted and so stimulated that they sometimes don't even notice us in the backyard anymore. And they just kind of like are going about their business so excited, like jumping up onto it and then like wondering, like, can I jump onto the ladder? I don't think I can jump onto the ladder. I'm going to jump into the dust bath. And it's delightful to see them enjoying something so much. For the episode, I just thought that this was a great opportunity. We got to see Barkley finally stick it to all those SJWs in the Enterprise crew, and you know, just give him the finger and drink some whiskey on the job. And I just know that he's been wanting to do that for so long, and so I'm just so happy for him that he finally got to do that.
And it's his first time on Star Trek. This is Dwight Schultz's grand entry onto the stage as Reg Barkley, who would go on to appear 11 more times, including in Star Trek First Contact, memorably. So let's jump into in-depth episode discussion here. The Memory Alpha summary is: Lieutenant Barkley, an introverted diagnostic engineer, is having difficulties dealing with his fantasies. This is definitely one of those episodes where someone shows up and everyone's like, oh yeah, this dude has been like a close friend of mine off screen for the entire three seasons up to this point. And you just have to like accept that. We are very torn that this person who you've never seen before is having problems. And I mean, those are typically these other episodes. Like, you know, I've mentioned Ashes to Ashes before, where Voyager has this like crew member who died earlier, apparently, that turns up and everyone's like, oh yeah, Lindsay Ballard, cool lady. Like we chilled a lot. Right there off camera, like, you know, that other scene where Janeway and Paris were talking, well, Kim and Lindsay Ballard right about 6 feet that way all episode, having like great times. So anyway, Star Trek does that often, and this is one of those times.
But the amazing thing is that he didn't die at the end of this episode, and because that didn't happen, I didn't actually realize that this was his first introduction. So I just sort of thought that I guess it does make sense, because I most of my other memories are, yeah, I guess post this, even though some of them are just absolutely terrible episodes. And so I just assume that they have to be earlier. But
his first appearance on the screen is in this teaser, which definitely has some shock value. You don't know who this dude is. He's just sitting at the bar like the lone stranger at like a Western saloon, and then like, you know, mm-hmm. the baddies come in, like, who are our regular cast members, come in, like, attack him, and he's like, yeah, fuck you, Riker, screw you, Geordi, I'm gonna push you over, and then he goes and talks to Troy. What y'all think about the teaser?
I thought it was it felt like he just kind of placed Riker on the bar, and Riker just, like, acted as though he had been thrown into the bar and knocked unconscious. But, like, it was, like, such a gentle move. It was really strange. I don't know. It wasn't the best fight choreography
I kind of feel like that's probably on purpose. Like, it sort of made me think of, like, you're playing a video game, but, like, on the absolute easiest possible setting. Where, like, because Barkley has no combat skills whatsoever, like, the characters have to pretend, like, oh my god, I've just been slammed against the wall with so much force, my back is broken.
Yeah.
Well, that's what happens with Geordi, when he, like, he just gives him a light push, and Geordi, like, goes, like, topples over the chair. Like,
there was no, like, double fist punch or anything, I don't think, so... Nothing to explain that amount of force.
The thing that fascinated me, it just happened like just in half a second, I don't know if you guys caught it, was how Guinan protects that whiskey and disappears off the back like, I've not seen her move so fast, not even in Time's Arrow or any of the Borg episodes. She's just like out of there. So yeah, it was comical. It was nice. I liked it. And I don't know, it's another thing, right? Like, if you're watching, I've not watched TNG sequentially, episode by episode, you know, forward, right? It's catching it on TV whenever you get it. It's a rerun, mm-hmm. things like that. So I get the sense that when I watched this for the first time, I already kind of had an idea of Barkley's awkwardness. So when I went into that first scene, it was like, oh, okay. he's like, what's going on here, right? Like, I don't know him to be this kind of guy. So that's maybe a unique perspective, but yeah.
This episode also has another holodeck episode trope. I mean, it's forget episode. It's in Star Trek Generations where, you know, something's happening in the holodeck and someone like comes in, bridge to Picard, and suddenly like the illusion is broken by a communication from outside of the holodeck. And that's how the teaser ends over here. It's like, you know, Geordi LaForge to Barclay or whatever. I forget exactly what's said. And then he has to rush off to the cargo area where he's hiding behind these.
Yeah, that was a little much.
It sets up the character. Like, now that I'm realizing that this is our first introduction to him, I think this episode does do it pretty well, because we go straight from, like, sort of a faux John Wayne type thing to, like, something that's, like, so awkward that I can't even, dig back and remember, like, the worst moments of, like, seventh grade. I don't know if I pulled quite that level of awkwardness that he did in that cargo bay.
And I think that's a theme going through, right? So I watched this when I was in middle school. And I'll be honest, I wasn't, you know, one of the people on the popular table and whatnot. But when you see somebody like Barclay, you feel like, oh my God, this is so much worse than what I'm going through. And it's, you empathize with it, and then you celebrate it, and then you're kind of immersed in that experience, and then you're feeling sad for him, you're feeling afraid for him. Those are the emotions I went through when I saw it the first time, when I saw it recently for this podcast. So that was nice.
Yeah, he's a great, like, humanizing character to have in mostly a show that's just a bunch of, like, superhuman type people, where, like, everyone can build like a time traveling device from, like, a handful of stuff just lying around. To you have a guy who's like, I think it's that he's very smart, but he's also extremely inept at the same time, and lazy, and it's I feel like he doesn't fit exactly in all the usual tropes that you have for these kind of, like, intensely awkward characters. I think they later on his character is definitely just stuck into the, oh, it's he's awkward because he's brilliant, but this episode definitely, I think there's a bit more to it that like, maybe he just, like, straight up doesn't belong at all. I don't know. I think it works pretty well in that regard.
He should be on the Cerritos.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He really doesn't come across as brilliant in this episode. Cause, like, mm-mm. I was saying this to Nacho earlier, he isn't the one that solves all the problems. Like, he just kind of gets the ball rolling maybe in the right direction, or kind of pauses at just the right time that gives the other people a chance to come up with a solution or whatever
and
it is.
And he's he's good at if someone, not even good at, but like if someone comes up with an idea, he knows at least to say, like, oh, I was going to do that. Which is like, I don't know if you were going to do that.
The other thing that we see early on in this episode, and it reports to the holodeck, is we have the sense that the regulars are kind of like you were saying, Adam, they're in their, like, superhuman phase where they're like, we don't understand, like, how this dude, and they're kind of being like, LaForge is angry. I don't think I remember a lot of episodes where LaForge is this angry. And Riker is very much in his state of, like, command Riker, where, you know, like, with Rule Loren, he's like, take off that, like, you know, whatever, I think the earring or whatever. It's not regulation. Like, there are some episodes where Riker has this, like, kind of dick persona. Yeah. And this is definitely, you know, you see that very early on with Riker in this episode. How'd y'all react to Riker and LaForge in this episode?
I've never seen Geordi. Like, that was the first thing that jumped out at me, was how mean Geordi was. Because Geordi's just generally not a mean character. Like, that's rarely something we ever see come from him. And he was just so mean and so, like, really not a good leader as far as but controlling the behavior of the rest of the team. Like, there were several moments that he should have called out. He should have called them out and been like, hey, no, that's not okay. You don't talk about crew members that way. Or, like, even, you know, when all of the engineering crew, they're like exchanging looks when Barclay's talking or trying to say something. I mean, it's just all so inappropriate. They're all awful human beings for the way they're treating Barclay. And it's no wonder he acts the way he does, because I wouldn't be my best self if I was around people doing looks like, what's he doing? Oh my God. You know, like yeah, I certainly wouldn't be my best if I was surrounded by people like that. So I found it very disappointing how the rest of them were behaving.
And Guinan calls that out explicitly, right? Like Geordi goes all belligerent to her and she's like, wait, you're talking about the effect, but you may be the cause, right? Like it's a feedback loop there. This is what I feel though, right? Like we look at these Star Trek episodes that have been shot 10, 20, 30 years ago, right? Or 25 years ago. And they're kind of, you know, in terms of being appropriate and moral then versus now, we've come a long way. Nachike, don't say anything. but at the same time, I'll let you finish.
We can do, we have 3 minutes. We can just set aside.
It's been a long time, but my time is finally here.
Oh, Lord. there needs to be a subreddit on this somewhere.
How do you stop when you start? Like, it's just, I mean, you know.
I stop because I don't know the words past the, it's been a long road getting from there to here. And then I don't know the words anymore. I'm just making them up.
So. Are you even a Star Trek fan if you don't like the most beautiful music Star Trek has ever featured? I mean, that's the question we really have to ask today before.
Heroes and Demons.
The animated series, the whole thing. all 7 minutes of music.
That's it. I can't be on this podcast anymore. The like,
groovy loop that plays over and over and over again.
Oh my God.
All right. Rudy, it had been a long time of something. I don't remember what you're talking about. Yes.
Hopefully I do. Yes, I was saying that when these episodes were shot, In the time frame that they were in, it's still so, I think it's heartwarming to look at the script, you know, being given to Guinan to say those things like, hey, you're wrong and you're making the person feel uncomfortable. And I think that I don't remember it clearly. It's not like I have a memory of that episode tying to how I dealt with life later on, but I can't believe that this episode did not help a bunch of people you know, deal with their either their introvertedness or their awkwardness or their ability to step out or deal with reality more, and not try and build too elaborate of these worlds of these protected worlds of fantasy and things like that. So I think we hit on Star Trek from a long time ago a lot, but I still feel that it did a lot in that time for that time.
Yeah, and I
want to
actually...
sorry to interrupt, Adam, real quick. I want to return to this idea of where we end when we get a little bit closer to the end of this episode, because I do want to talk about the takeaway from this episode in some more detail, but I want to keep establishing the setup a little bit, because we just talked about how there's this toxic work environment, which let's call this what it is. It's a toxic work environment. If you had a professional position, forget the military, anywhere else, where like, I mean, actually, maybe the military has been historically an exception to this, at least the way it's portrayed in movies. But like, you know, if you're mocking a coworker and a whole group of you, I mean, that's an HR violation. Like, you know, that's not a great work environment for anybody to be in. And it was interesting to me that Geordi makes this complete turnaround immediately after, I think it's after Guinan talks to him. I can't remember it's suggested that, like, it's right before he's like, hey, Barclay, you should come to the morning briefing. And you know,
I think that there's two things that happened, because it's one is that it's sort of a sign to him that, like, no, you need to be his best buddy. Like, you need to be his best friend. And so, like, that now is part of Geordi's job to make sure that Barclay succeeds, but then also having the humanizing side of things for Guinan. I think it's like those two moments that turn Geordi towards the other direction.
Also, And this is a very important question. I'm actually being quite serious when I say this. Why the hell is a work environment being dictated by the jokes made by a 17-year-old?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, why aren't any of these adults being like, there's a teenager making fun of one of our coworkers. This is highly inappropriate. This is a teachable moment for the teenager and not making, you know, rude nicknames for a member of our staff. Like, why isn't anybody telling Wesley, hey, listen, we don't know what kind of school environment it is that you go to, but like in a professional environment, in the engineering room of the flagship of Starfleet, we don't treat people this way. You know?
Go ahead.
I think that what's interesting, so we talked about how like maybe it's that this writer doesn't know the cast as or doesn't know the characters quite so much and is sort of like jumping in from outside, but I can actually see how some of this could happen on the Enterprise, because we have especially season one Picard is not very good at like sort of dealing with those interpersonal relationships with like his coworkers or colleagues. So I mm-hmm. could see him being a pretty distant captain in that sense, as far as like interpersonal team dynamics type things goes. So I feel like that sort of coupled with that, you have basically everyone on the Enterprise, especially if this really is a thing about it being the flagship, like it's the top like geniuses, most effective people across like an organization that is like known for producing really excellent people, like that can probably pretty easily get into these sort of toxic behaviors without, if you don't have a strong leadership that is focusing on having like healthy interactions between people. So I kind of, as I was watching this episode and like seeing it go all the way up to the top before it had any sort of fix to it, I can see how this could become rampant in this environment. And so I thought this was... this was an interesting episode showing just how like you can unintentionally just create this horrible environment for people. And maybe you don't realize that that's what it is, because you think that you're just having fun, or that you're doing great with your team. But like the moment you introduce someone new who like doesn't fit your exact pattern is like it can become a horrible environment, and then it sort of brings everybody down. Maybe like from an HR standpoint or whatever, I thought this was a really compelling episode.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And I can appreciate that. I was just peeved at how, I think it's, everything you're saying is correct. I think I was just peeved that nobody told Wesley just like that an adult was allowed to be bullied by a kid.
You know, and Wesley, of all sad. People.
Yeah, damn you, Wesley. It's difficult, right? There's so you talk about flagship, right? The best of the best of the best, extroverts, charismatic people, you know, and so that can get cliquish, right? Almost, right? I don't know if you were going in that direction, Adam.
Yeah.
At the same time, these people have ascended to this level because they have emotional maturity and excellence as well. So then how the heck does this happen? It's actually, I think it keeps going back to that, you know, growing up high school, middle school kind of situation where somebody almost unknowingly makes fun of somebody just to get into the in-group, and they don't feel good about it, or they don't know what they've done, but it's sort of happened and everybody piles on that and it's too late, right? So it's a little bit of that, but I think it gives even more depth to how Data is almost like your conscience, right? Like where at any point in time, he's like, wait, stop, take a step back. How does this make sense? How is this okay, right? So he's asking these questions. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know, it's interesting where Wesley and I don't know if it's Wesley or Jordy try to rationalize what they're doing. Is that an actual rationalization, or is the writer trying to be sarcastic? If I looked at it, like if I saw the episode 20, 25 years ago, maybe it made sense to me as an actual rationalization, but now it almost sounds like sarcastic, which in a way is good writing. I don't know, or at least the way I look at it from this perspective.
Well, you know, you mentioned Data. That just made me think of there was a scene a little bit later. Oh, it's when they the first time they make the connection between the two different incidents that maybe there's some connection between mm-hmm. them with the anti-grav unit and I can't remember what the other incident was, but oh, the cup, the glass maybe. But where Data tries to give credit to Barclay for making the connection, even though it really wasn't fully Barclay that made the connection. But Data's doing what Geordi was supposed to be doing, trying to help prop up Barclay and try to help him, you know, feel a little more comfortable and make him feel like he was an important part of the team. And I thought, you know, Data's doing a better job than mm-hmm. some others.
Yeah, I think it's there's a lot of opportunities that are presented in this episode by Data for people to like re-examine their choices. I'll make this point maybe right before we take a break here. One of the people in this episode who's kind of I think it's a surprising amount of screen time actually is Duffy, the other engineer.
Big jerk.
Yeah, he's played by Charlie Long, who I don't know if y'all have seen Charlie Long in other stuff. He plays a prominent role as a congressperson in the Don't Ask, Don't Tell discussion of The West Wing. It's a very famous little clip on YouTube. It's watched now a little bit less now that Don't Ask, Don't Tell is gone. But it's a very famous little clip where Sam Seaborn and The West Wing is arguing with these two congresspeople and this military officer, and then the admiral walks in and just smokes it's typical West Wing. Like, the guy walks mm-hmm. in at the end and completely demolishes the conservative argument against Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So that's where I remember Charlie Long from. I looked him up. I was like, I wonder what Charlie Long is doing now. He's been in a lot of stuff. Turns out his last acting credit is in 2002. Mm. He currently is a psychology professional focusing in areas around human sexualities, queer counseling, and narrative practice. He teaches courses in that are related to psychology at several universities. And, you know, he has a Psychology Today profile. So, like, it's pretty cool that he started out as an actor, but now he's doing all of this. He's a counseling professional.
Yeah, he felt so bad about what he did to Barclay he had to make up for it in his career.
Have
him on the podcast and have him weigh in on those scenes.
That would be funny. But just a little story I wanted to share, because I usually look up these guest stars and see if they're doing anything interesting, and usually it's just like, oh yeah, and he's been in with The West Wing, and then he's been in The Wire or whatever. And now this guy is like, oh, he's awesome counseling professional. All right, let's take a break here. We'll come back and discuss more about Hollow Pursuits.
I wouldn't bother you with something that's minor, Commander, but it may be a symptom of a more serious problem.
Do you think we'll need to put into a starbase?
We'll have a better idea after Mr. Barclay runs a check on the power systems.
It was Lieutenant Barclay who first suggested a link between the two incidents.
What?
No, it wasn't. I mean, not really.
Will your investigation affect our available power during the mission?
No. No, sir. We'll have to shut off some systems. We'll shut them down a few at a time. It shouldn't, I don't think so.
Good. I look forward to your report, Mr. Broccoli. Barclay.
If you will excuse me.
Welcome back to Strange New Takes. We're talking about Hollow Pursuits from the third season of TNG. I wanted to have a short discussion about the plot of this episode. I've told Emily this earlier. I watched this late at night. I was quite sleepy. Some alcohol might have been consumed earlier. And I will confess that I didn't understand anything about the scientific plot in this episode. There were some people handling some large objects, a little thing failed, and they all broke, and there was some gas, and then some things were happening. It flew straight over my head, y'all, and I don't understand what happened. So,
have fallen asleep for the one part where they explained it. They really only explained it in about a 30-second segment.
I vaguely remember that. So, I don't know. So can someone help me figure out what happened? Like, what... There was... Okay, I'll tell you what I do know. there's some sort of chemical that was not being used by Starfleet anymore. They used it a long time ago.
Invidium.
Stop using it. Invidium. They were...
Is that like vibranium?
No, let's not introduce other things. My little brain will get confused right now. I'm trying to make sense of this already. So this Invidium was being... So the Enterprise was transporting some sort of medical something or another for some other planet or something.
I think they're taking vaccines down to Springfield, Missouri.
Probably. Oh, I see.
Again, yeah. With the don't confuse me with things, I will actually believe them. Because I don't know enough to know that you're joking. When you said vaccines, I was like, oh, of course. Yeah, I guess I remember.
No, I think they might have been vaccines. I might not have been fully joking with that.
Something medical, so.
Okay, some sort of medical supplies is on the planet. And those people still use Invidium. And Invidium messes with some Starfleet systems. So when initially that thing cracked and opened because the grav sled failed or whatever it was, the Invidium got out and started messing with the Enterprise's systems.
I think it mostly got on, like, I think somehow Duffy. And O'Brien, they got it on them somehow. And they were the people, they were the ones that spread it throughout the ship. So that's how they were able to narrow it down, because they started looking at the places where Duffy and O'Brien both had been. And so that's how they were able to come to the conclusion.
Specifically, so on Memory Alpha, like the in the teaser section, they have a picture of Duffy. It says it's labeled Duffy with a leaking canister. I'm pretty sure that Duffy's the person who discovers the first one that was broken. And so he picks up and removes it. When the sled fails and topples over and one of them falls over, I think O'Brien might be the person that picks up the other broken canister. And so it's those two contact points. It's then sort of anything that they touch around the Enterprise starts failing in weird ways.
Okay.
And it might... I'm trying to remember if it transfers between different people, but I'm not sure.
I will say I was really glad that O'Brien discovered the malfunction in the transporter room with a canister rather than with a person.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah.
That would have been unfortunate if he's like, oh, wow, Ensign Francis really doesn't, oh, gosh, medical emergency. You know, that would have been
like the motion picture or whatever.
Yeah.
There's an early episode of Enterprise where they transport a guy and he has, like, rocks stuck in his face and stuff, and it's very creepy. So what does Barclay do to figure this out again? Because I remember him, like, saying something like, oh, I'm sorry, I have to butt in
he
here.
He does babble, though, right? It's not, yeah, he does, but he said something like, maybe we need to be looking at who is the common thread or something.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like maybe something one of us is doing something.
Yeah, something common across all of us. I don't know what I'm... Something like, he's not confident about what he's saying, but he's kind of babbling about what happens to be the root cause. And I think I agree with you, Emily, and you said this before, where he doesn't really intellectually figure it out. He's just sort of hitting in the dark. And,
right.
Yeah.
It happens to be the right answer.
They definitely add the brilliant aspect of Barclay to later episodes. It's not in this episode. Except he's very well spoken on the holodeck. In his holodeck programs. Other than that.
So, thank you for the technical explanation. I think I grasp what happens in this episode now. But let's discuss the holodeck program since we're talking about them. You know, it's pretty typical, like, guy who's trying to feel special and beats up his coworkers, which is kind of like Mariner in the Lower Decks episode, where she murders all of her coworkers. Which everybody else...
That was, like, our longest episode.
Right, our longest episode of the podcast. Everyone else on the internet is like, this is hilarious! Ha ha ha! And we're like, man, this sucks!
I think Adam and I thought it was hilarious. Yeah, Adam and I kind of got dragged along on the ride.
Yeah, I think Emily and I were couldn't help ourselves and were excited and texting about it, about how good it was.
And I wish we had really text. I wish we had just had our little side conversation, because we would have been able to, like, geek out over the episode and had a good time. But when it came onto this podcast and we're like, we're not supposed to have thought that was fun. Okay.
Yeah. Wrong think will be punished.
Yeah.
I wasn't on it, and I heard it after, and I was like, "Oh my! I didn't think of these things." I started feeling bad for myself. I was like, "Why did I not think of these things?"
Oh, same here, Rudy. Same here. Okay. Good.
Well, it was a proud tradition in Reginald Barclay's shoes of designing holo programs where you have fun with your coworkers, I guess. Very creepy to put a female coworker into your programs and have them like romance you. And I guess it's the ethical conversation.
Doesn't the doctor do that too?
Yeah.
Right. And so I guess the discussion I was trying to nudge us towards, I will now explicitly ask about, which is what he did ethical? Like, say the holodeck exists and we can do these things now. And there's some of this is coming up with like deepfake technology, right? Like where you can have, like I was talking about Anthony Bourdain. They had Anthony Bourdain read a letter he sent to somebody, which Bourdain himself had never read during his lifetime. He'd only typed it out. They had his voice read it out in the documentary, and there's a lot of questions around that. So in the holodeck, you're essentially making people do whatever you want them to do because you have their physical parameters. You can even have them be personality-wise similar to the way they are in real life. Where's the line?
That's interesting because I don't really see one. And this is what I felt the episode was complex and deep in terms of holo rights and self-awareness and tying back to Nog and Vic Fontaine. It seems like the characters in the holo program understand the world outside, mm-hmm. and at least Counselor Troy on the holographic Counselor Troy understands the world outside, and she's counseling him in a kind of funny way, right? About before he changes it to that whatever medieval situation, right? So they're self-aware, or they're aware of the fact that there is an actual universe out there and the dynamics of that universe. But at the same time, they have been very carefully programmed as if to just meet Barclay's needs. So is that okay? I don't know. It's confusing.
I don't know that I got that sense from this episode in particular in terms of like whether the characters themselves had any awareness. Like the thing that the thing that was like sticking for me was whether you should be allowed to have like the physical or even like the personality characteristics of maybe of anybody, but specifically of anybody that you work with, like maybe those should be protected except for cases of, maybe like if we think about like a modern equivalent is like there are certain protections around privacy or around like libel and whatever for people, unless it's something like they are a public figure and like you're allowed, or like an insta satire, and you're allowed to like make fun of them in that particular way. And I wonder if those types of things, like especially like as we get into like deep fake territory, like we're almost dealing with some of these same things now. Like maybe it should be just downright illegal or somehow made impossible to like have your crew members be in the holodeck as holo characters with you.
Yeah, and I think the writers take a pretty, they take a strong stance on this where Riker's like, this should not be allowed, erase everything. And then I think I don't know if it's Deanna or Jordy, it's like, don't know of any regulation, right? That says that you can't do it. It's more around nobody is going to judge what you do in your mind, or in this case, in your holographic world, but it shouldn't interfere with your life outside of it, right? People outside should not be suffering or waiting on you. So Jordy makes it clear what he thinks is okay and what's not.
I mean,
Jordy is a little questionable because didn't he fall in love with the...
Yeah, which love that they at least brought it up. I had a weird episode
I've
where I
this.
Fell in love with somebody. Like, we all done
because
it.
Because he is the one that's the least troubled by it. Like, he really doesn't... I mean, he kind of walks on there and is like, whoa, what's this? But really, he doesn't seem to have much of a problem with it. Which makes me think Jordy actually probably has some social anxiety as well, and kind of sorts through some of that on the holodeck. And so that's why he doesn't have as much, anyway.
this episode deals with this a little bit, and there are other episodes that have dealt with a little bit more, which is, you know, the ability to separate reality from the holographic reality. And that's really hard to do. I mean, some people, you know, that's the typical thing. If you have a dream where your partner is bad to you or something, and you wake up and you're mad at them, you know, there's that kind of thing. And I feel like there's a lot of possibilities of just at least misunderstandings, if not outright psychotic problems. If you say you have some, you know, you're best friends with your captain in the holodeck, but your actual captain doesn't feel that way. I feel like there's just too many opportunities for allowing yourself to mentally put yourself in an unhealthy place. If you can do that sort of thing, like, but I don't know, maybe if it just becomes a reality of society, the society comes up with some structured ways to deal with it. The other question I had regarding this is kind of somewhat related, but not quite there, which is, at what point should your coworkers or anybody be allowed to barge into the holodeck while you're in there doing whatever you want privately? Because here, Geordi, Riker, they don't care what's happening.
Yeah.
It's just like, beep, 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 door opens, they go in, and like, oh, we can't believe this. Oh my God, what's happening? And that seems kind of inappropriate that there's no notification to a holodeck user that, like, real people, their coworkers, their friends, whoever has entered.
Yeah. And I think if you go to DS9 and the whole concept of the holosuites and what Quark kind of markets them for, right? Like, I don't think people are supposed to step into other people's holosuites. So it's almost like the show is learning over time on what holosuites really mean in terms of personal space, right? Or it's a completely different use case holosuite versus a common holodeck for a flagship starship.
Well, how many holodecks are there on the Enterprise?
Let's find out. Enterprise D. I'm sure Memory Alpha has an exhaustive list of...
I just keep thinking, if someone like Barclay uses the holodeck as much as they do, you'd think someone would hear about it if there were only a few holodecks.
Mm. Well, and by the way, did y'all have your eyes get hurt when the holodeck comes and it's like bright yellow and black, and it's just like, ah, my eyes.
The grid.
Holodecks located on deck 10 and deck 12, apparently, but it doesn't say how many there are. So as many as are convenient to the plot.
I'm trying to think if I've ever heard of holodeck 3 or holodeck 4, or if it's holodeck 1 and holodeck 2. I feel like I've heard of holodeck 2 before. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I'd say that there needs to be some sort of, like, lock, you know, on the door. Well, it kind of seems like, Mom, I told you not to come in. But anyway, moving on. The other final ethical question I will ask before we move on, and this one has a pretty clear-cut answer if you ask me, and I bet Max might agree if he was here, is should a counselor be allowed to discuss what happened in a private counseling session with the supervisor of the person she was counseling, or anybody, really, for that matter? If there's no, like, imminent self-harm.
I think that last part is key. And I think in this case, there wasn't. Or harm to the greater collective or community or the ship. Right? So
yeah.
I think here there... It actually gives us a snapshot of what was considered okay, at least by the writers and maybe even by society at that time in the 90s. And it's not anymore, which is good.
But I don't know if it would have been okay then either to have your counselor just, like, telling rando people. I guess maybe this sort supervisor of thing is different in a military operation, but I have no idea. But
I feel like the counselors on Star Trek tell a whole bunch of people about the things that happen with
This is why it's such a toxic work environment. Is
like, think about last week It's Only a Paper Moon. You know, I mean, Esri is talking about Nog and counseling with other people. So,
and also, like, right, with the people that he knows that can, like, now have different feelings about him. And yeah.
And I mean, I guess. So I don't know, because I'm thinking about. I mean, obviously, when you have, like, parents versus children, counselors tell parents about things that are happening with kids, you know, or like things to look out for, you know, like they may not go and say, okay, this is exactly transcript of what happened in the counseling session, but they share certain aspects.
But that's, I know that's also because we've decided kids don't have rights.
Right.
Yeah, I just feel that, I mean, either the writers were completely out of touch with what was the norm in that period, and they felt it was okay, or that was the norm. I'm kind of leaning towards, I guess I trust them to understand what the norms were. Then I know it's not the norm today.
Oh, I'm the opposite. I feel like the way that at least from like how a lot of stuff is treated, I feel like we're just going, like a lot of shows, they portray counselor or like therapists in the same way, which I feel like is more about like, oh, this is how therapists are portrayed on television, and this is what audiences are familiar with, so this is how I'm going to portray it, rather than like I have actual, like I'm going to write about what my like therapy session was actually like. I don't know.
I think this, in this episode, it was convenient to the plot that Troy went to Dr. Geordi and saw that they had that happen. And I also thought that Troy's, the way they wrote Troy was kind of cheap, in that they had her enjoying that there are all these other crewmates in the, Barclays program, but then she gets really mad when it's her.
Muzzle it.
Yeah, I feel like a counselor would have been like, this seems like an interesting way to deal with your problems, and I don't know if I'm fully, you know, like, I don't know. It seemed like very binary, like, hey, this is great, or like, oh, this is bad, like, you know.
And it was basically trying to, you know, downplay her maturity as a counselor, like, oh, you were being magnanimous about it before, but when it came to you, haha. I actually feel that in so many situations, Guinan is like the real counselor of the ship. And like she's doing Troy a big favor in so many ways.
Troy is the actual like incompetent Barclay type in the counseling department. And the Guinan is the one that's like running the entire like counseling group. Well, okay. So getting back to our plot here, you know, we've Barclay gets discovered, there's that whole extended sequence in the holodeck, and then there in the midst of this all is that like the science plot is unfolding in the background. We see a lot of O'Brien, a lot of Duffy, Picard calls Barclay Broccoli, there's some stuff with Wes, a lot of stuff happens, and then in the end the ship is imminently about to demise and cannot come out of warp, and the injector, something about the injector manifold, I feel like I remember. And Barclay helps save the day.
And is integrated into reality and the crew, and all is good.
He says goodbye in a sequence just like the teaser, which is like, you're like, oh, why is this dude like in front of the entire bridge saying goodbye? Like, is he getting transferred off? And then they're like, computer, save program, bye-bye, PC, we shocked you again, fooled you.
Well, they fooled me the first time, I'll be honest. I thought he was, when he was walking up, first time I saw it, I thought he was going to apologize to everybody for fantasizing about them and having their holograms like set up the way he did. Then he started talking about that he's leaving as well. And so, yeah, I'll admit I was gullible. I fell for it the first time.
Yeah, I did too. I was just like, wait, how is he going to come back to be like that weird spider thing in that terrible episode? But
now let's talk about the ending here and the takeaway that we were discussing before. Adam, you had some thoughts before I interrupted you much earlier in our recording here about the takeaway and how we should feel about the message this episode is trying to send.
That's a way to lay it out for our,
it's a good message.
I think it's a even though that like Star Trek has this danger of like getting into very special episode territory, I think that this episode actually does have a pretty good case for showing us that it's like our hero characters, like they can actually be the problem, and that there's you have to be careful about like how you are like treating yourself and like working with your coworkers to make sure to like continually work hard on having a good environment for everybody. And that's, I think it's a, the episode's pretty good at showing how, that kind of that anybody can be, I guess, guilty of this type of behavior. Like we've all made fun of somebody maybe when it wasn't appropriate. And I guess like to some degree, like that's usually, shown in shows to be like a lesson to like the third graders who are watching it to be mm-hmm. like, oh, you shouldn't make fun of kids in class because it's not nice. But I think it's just as important for people who are like just like midway through their career to sort of keep this stuff in mind of like you are probably the problem sometimes and you need to pay attention to that.
For sure. I'd like to call out just one other thing around acting. I'm thinking all of them had quite a blast playing those scenes, those whatever you call them, medieval scenes, especially Patrick Stewart and you know him being a Shakespearean actor before. But I got a good giggle out of watching all those scenes. There's loads of fun.
Patrick Stewart seemed like much more comfortable in that kind of getup than everybody else.
That's true.
I felt like Data had especially had a look of I was just thinking about V for Vendetta the whole time when I was watching it.
Rudy, I don't know if I'm paraphrasing too much or even accurately when I believe earlier you said that this episode kind of made you feel like it's okay to be different and it's okay to be I think for me I have mixed feelings about that because they showed Barkley being different, but they also showed him being incompetent and like bad at his job. So I think that muddied the water a little bit for me in that they showed that the guy who's different gets mocked by his coworkers and is just not good at what he does. So which is better than the trope of like the like, you know, genius with issues that everybody just doesn't understand, but then like, you know, is just fixes the entire ship and every quietly is like the best.
Yeah, but I think it's a little bit different though, because what they delved into, like they looked into his history and found that like mm-hmm. actually that people have given pretty good recommendations of Barkley, and that so like maybe he's not a genius or whatever, but he seems to have been effective in the teams that he has, which shows that I think it's that does put the blame squarely on the Enterprise crew of that they're the ones who took someone who is perfectly serviceable. Yeah, he's reclusive or whatever, or maybe he's a little bit weird, mm-hmm. but it's because of them that he sort of starts takes a nosedive in terms of like performance and competency. That like maybe he wasn't obsessed with the holodeck on other ships. I think also the at this point holodecks are still new enough that maybe other ships don't even have them. But there are certainly other forms of entertainment that people had access to, and I think it's I just feel like this is definitely a case of they created an environment where someone who like maybe is a little bit like off of the normal target of like what they're looking for they caused him to have a lot of the issues that he's going through. Okay. In terms of performance,
I think you worded well what they are looking for, right? So it's essentially culture, right? And here there's ship culture, so there's an established way of doing things and people are comfortable about it, and somebody new or different is coming in and it's all perception based, so it's trying to get the viewer to understand that it's good to keep an open mind. Mm-hmm. And there's a saying, I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly, Maya Angelou, right? So she's there's a saying from her that people have a sense of belonging, right? People want to belong. People at the same time want to be free. You're truly free when you don't belong anywhere, which is almost like a contradiction, right? You don't have any home or any grounding. And so it's just very thought-provoking. And the way they ended it, it's like, I don't know if they ended it as, hey, he's just one of us again, or, okay, we have come to accept and understand his uniqueness. I think they do that later on in the series. At the end of this episode, it's like, hey, you're all right after all, man. You're cool. You're all right, right?
Yeah, after this, he's definitely more of the like quirky genius prototype that we've noticed as a kind of a trope. Well, any other final notes on Hollow Pursuits that we haven't got to that y'all wanted to discuss before we jump into ratings?
I just thought it was weird that for some reason, I don't know if this is how it was built in the episode too, but on Memory Alpha, it has Will Wheaton listed as he's one of the stars, and it's Will Wheaton as Wesley Crusher / Barclay's Blue Boy hologram. And I don't know what that's about. I thought it was pretty clear that that was supposed to be Wesley Crusher, and I don't know why he's like listed as a he's just like a different character.
Yeah, so the reason it says the Blue Boy is because he's wearing a costume that is a pretty direct rip of the painting The Blue Boy by Thomas Gainsborough. It's a very famous painting of a guy. He's not wearing the hat, but like almost exactly like that shiny blue outfit. So that's why it's a very strange kind of call out. It'd just be like Wesley Crusher hologram. Like, anyway. You also made me think of one other quick note, which is. Slipped my mind. I was about to point out something else that happened there.
Well, I bet it anyway, was great.
Any other fun? Huh?
I bet it was a great one.
Did y'all notice the Michael Jackson gloves at the end when they're handling, they're running the like purple thing and like they're wearing the shiny gloves? That was just hilarious. That was something I took in my notes. Also, the background actors were, in a lot of cases, wearing the old TNG uniforms. Mm. It's still not completely switched over as a cast. But all of the actors who were in focus were wearing the new ones.
Oh, so they had the collars this episode.
Yeah. But the, a lot of the background actors were walking around in the like collarless uniforms. With the
any scans?
I did not see any scans. Nope. So, all right. Well, let's do some strange new ratings. Who wants to stick their necks out and give Hollow Pursuits a rating?
I'm going to give this one a 7. I think that I appreciate sort of the discussion around this episode and maybe the like things that we learned about it more than actually watching it. Yeah, so nothing special, but there was some nuanced discussion of mental health issues, and then they also just glossed over a few other things that were extremely troubling to me. But I don't know. It was fine.
I will go ahead and give it... I feel similar, Adam, but I'll go ahead and give it 8... leaking Invidium canisters out of 10. I feel it's comical to watch. It does try to touch upon important inclusion issues, and the mindset of being introverted and how that is not, that can be created by the environment around you versus being a personality that you take out to your environment. So I think those are important things, and considering when it was shot from the 90s perspective, I think it could have and it must have helped people deal with that or understand that even from a third person point of view. So yeah, 8 out of 10.
Okay. I'm gonna give this one a 5. I didn't hate it. Maybe this was my mindset at the time, so I apologize to everybody involved with this episode, but. I just didn't. I I was not taken in, and when I watched, there was some like comedy, but like the holo programs kind of almost just creeped me out a little bit, and yeah. stuff that Troy pulled. I was like, oh my god! So the many times during this episode that I was pulled out of the action, and I couldn't really focus on like, I agree with you, Adam, that the discussion we've had has been kind of illuminating and helpful for me, but I wasn't thinking about any of those things while watching it.
It's same.
Yeah, I was gonna give it a. What, 3 out of 5? And mostly because there wasn't anything egregious that had to drop it down to the 2 or the 1 range like some of the other episodes we've reviewed. Yeah. But it was just kind of eh. It wasn't a super exciting episode. I forgot until like around lunchtime today. Oh, my computer's about to die. I forgot until about lunchtime today that I hadn't finished the episode. I should finish that episode. So
all right, everyone, for next week we'll be discussing Heroes and Demons from Voyager, so watch that before you listen to our next episode. It's a really fun one with the Doctor, so I'm really looking forward to that. Well, before your computer dies, Emily, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Rudy. Thank you, Adam. And, of course, thank you, Max and Dinah and Bill, wherever you all are.
Thanks, Notch.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, happy to be here. Glad we all discussed Star Trek. Thank you, dear listener, for joining us. Thank you, Jishnu Guha, for recording our theme music. And special thanks to the U.S. Navy, whose sonar buoy cases were the canisters that Miles O'Brien was transporting and that broke. That's what the props were made out of, U.S. Navy sonar buoy suitcases. So thanks to Navy to make that possible. All right, everybody, we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.